State Senator Larry Stutz joins us on the line. Senator, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Jeff. I hope you are. I hope your move to Mobile has gone well.
So far, so good. No complaints, but, I'm thankful every day that I remain on the air. I'll say that. Let's get into it. Well, first off, tell us, been a while since we talked. How are things up your way with regards to the pandemic, the hospitalizations and the cases and the local economy?
Well, I think overall, as far as the pandemic is concerned, things are fairly stable. In Helen Keller Hospital, where I work, I looked at the statistics this morning. We have 17 patients in the hospital that are COVID positive, and we have 6 on the ventilator. So, and those numbers are fairly constant. We've been in the low to mid-teens most of the last couple of months or so, and have had 4, 5, or 6 people on the ventilator during that time. So the numbers have stayed about the same, I guess.
Do you think we've learned medically about this? Just based on your interactions with the medical professionals up there, that they're getting a better handle on COVID-19?
Absolutely. You know, it was a kind of a new situation to deal with when we first started seeing people. And, they've changed how they treat it somewhat. I mean, I'm not on the front line of treating people with COVID. I have had a few pregnant patients that have had it and have actually delivered 2 patients that were COVID positive. And they were both asymptomatic. They were just caught on the screening test when they came in the hospital. And one of the ladies actually had twins, and the other one had 1 baby. But none of the babies got sick, and actually none of the mothers got sick. We isolated them and delivered them as usual, and they all did fine. But as far as the overall COVID patients, you know, they are intervening with medication more frequently and with, oxygen therapy and so forth without the ventilator, if possible. So they have changed how they're treating a little bit. The thing that's interesting about the what we are seeing is people that are delaying treatment for other conditions. I talk to a lot of people that I say, well, you know, we can check you in the ER. Well, I'd rather not come to the emergency room. And just a couple of days ago, I was talking to one of the oncologists here and asked him if it had impacted his practice at all since March. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, we're seeing a lot more stage 3 and 4 cancers that would have been 1s or 2s in March or April, and people are delaying coming in to get treatment. So not just the COVID specifically, but I think it's affecting other medical conditions.
Yeah, just for the sake of our listeners that may not be familiar, not only do you serve in the state legislature and the state senate, but you're a practicing obstetrician. So maybe not directly on the front lines, but you're close enough to have some interaction and to know some of the dangers or know about the dangers regarding the pandemic.
That's correct. Yeah, I practice OBGYN. I've been in the Shoals area for 28 years and I'm still practicing basically full time, except when the legislature's in session.
So tell us, Doctor, when we're talking about this, it's always the policy question and where we're headed. And not to debate about masks or anything like that, but do you feel like these measures in place are really having a positive impact on combating this thing?
I do overall. You know, I think we've learned a lot, not just about treatment of the disease, but just about the disease in general. And I think the data now pretty well proves that it is primarily aerosol transmission. So I think that the masks are important if they're properly worn, and I think they make a difference. The things that we've gone overboard on, I'm not aware of any data that says that it's transmitted by fomites, by inanimate objects. But yet, every restaurant we go to still is using plastic silverware and using, you don't have salt and pepper shakers on the table. And, you know, so I think some of those things that, as we've learned, that it's really aerosol transmission, there's no point doing those things any longer. So I think there's a lot of things that we need to just open back up and say, you know, yes, probably a good idea to wear a mask. You know, this is the first time in history that we've tried to quarantine all the healthy people. You know, we've limited so many things that normal healthy people can do, and I'm not sure that's all helping anything. I think we need to open a lot of things back up and move ahead. The schools are one of them. I think we're doing irreparable damage to a whole, basically a generation of children. I do see a lot of teachers in my practice, and I've asked just about every teacher that I've seen just an open-ended question of how's school going, and the universal answer has been terrible. We're wasting a lot of time. We're not getting through to the children. A lot of the children are missing out. You know, the issue is what we're doing with education is we're widening the gap between the haves and the have-nots. The children that have an ideal home situation are doing well. I'm sure they're keeping up. But I commented to one of the teachers that I saw last week that I bet half the children in her school district have not touched a book since March. And she said, oh, it's higher than that. She said, I bet it's 75%. And so we're leaving a whole group of children behind by not having them in school full time. And I think that's going to have impact for years to come. You know, we're told on the education policy issues in the legislature that if you're not reading on grade level by the time you reach the third grade, that you never catch up. And so we're taking a whole group of first, second, and third graders that are basically missing out on almost a year of instruction.
I mean, that's the cost benefit analysis in this policy stuff. It seems like the impulse is always to err on the side of caution, and even to an extreme in some points, that where we're not weighing these other factors, we're not doing the cost benefit analysis, we're not looking at it, as you say, the education standpoint, there's the economic standpoint, and, you know, I guess it does pose a problem because finding that right formula is such an unknown.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and like I said, early on we made some really drastic changes, and now we know more about it than we did in March. And, you know, the whole issue, and I know that everybody's familiar with the term, but we have to have either herd immunity or by natural exposure, or we have to have herd immunity by vaccine. The virus, as we know it, is not going to go away. It's going to, just like all the other viruses that are out there in the population, and until a significant percentage of the population is immune to the virus, it can spread readily throughout the population. And, you know, limiting exposure in groups like school-age children that have very, very, very low mortality rates, that have very low incidence of severe infection at all, is maybe hurtful in the long run, because they're not getting exposed. They're not going to have antibodies. And if, you know, we can build the antibody level in the general population while we're waiting on an effective vaccine. You know, I know he said a lot of different things, but I heard Dr. Fauci say that if a new vaccine is 60% effective, that's going to be a home run. And you know, so which means it's probably going to be less than that. And if you accept the number that around 70% herd immunity is the level that's effective, and the vaccine is only 40, 50, 60% effective, then we've got a lot of ground to make up for building immunity by natural exposure. And the low-risk groups of the population are the ones that need to get that. You know, and if you're a school-age child and you have grandparents in the home that are older and have comorbidities, then, yeah, you may need to wear a mask at home, but you don't need to wear one at school. So I think we need to open a lot of those things with the school system open.
I'm joined by State Senator Larry Stutz-Tuscumbia here on the program. Senator, one of the things that it seems like your colleagues, or at least there's been some chatter about, is talking about rethinking the way we do health policy in the state, on the state level. A lot of people, you have told us in the past that you were aware of this system we have, but a lot of people probably weren't aware that you had this, you had a state health officer with this much power. It could go and act as he sees fit, really unchecked in some circumstances. That you know, your colleague, I think Tom Watley from Lee County, wants to take a look at this. So, what is a good approach where it's not maybe not too political when it comes to these pandemics, but maybe having where you do have some checks and balances involved, so people don't feel like they're being left out, their concerns aren't being heard.
Well, I understand the concerns, you know, and I'll say I don't know that we need the legislature making public health decisions directly. As I said, Dr. Harris is well qualified. He and I have known each other for years. We were actually in residency together, so I have known him. I've known Scott for a good number of years, but you know, this was a 100-year pandemic. We've never had anything like this since the early 1900s. So when all this started, there was no direction from, well, other people in the department have experience dealing with it or whatever. So we, the governor, Dr. Harris, had to make some decisions about what we're going to do. And, you know, now, as I said earlier, we know more about it. And we limited a lot of things that now are proven not to be important in the spread of the disease. And we need to go back and revisit those things and say, yeah, the masks are probably important, but taking salt and pepper shakers out of restaurants is not important. You know, we've just done a lot of things like that we've learned as we went. As far as limiting the authority, I think we do need some checks and balances, but again, the state health officer is well qualified and has access to a lot of data and that other people may not have. But again, I know that sounds like I'm riding the fence, I guess, on the issue, but I do think medical professionals need to be making the medical decisions. But as far as public policy decisions and setting some parameters of what they can do without oversight, I think it's probably reasonable.
Well, I think this, though, that there is, you know, you listen to medical professionals and they're looking at it from strictly a medical point of view. And we had this discussion on with your former colleague, Senator Phil Williams, who as Rusty Glover, another one of your former colleagues, points out, you and he and Senator Williams are all graduates of the University of South Alabama. But I digress. Anyway, the idea that you have these economic concerns that aren't really in the purview of the medical professionals, you have all these other concerns, education, you go down the list where you listen just to the medical professionals, some of them would shut everything down all over again, which that's not really feasible. So I think at some level you got to rely on political leaders or elected officials to take that role, right?
Well, I agree. That's why I said there need to be some checks and balances. I agree. You know, the economic impact, in the neighborhood that I live in, within 5 miles of where we live, there have been I guess, 6 or 7 restaurants that have gone out of business since March. I mean, that were well-established, long-standing restaurants that have gone out of business. I mean, we've had tremendous economic impact, and that's why I say, as the medical side of it, as we've learned more about the disease, we need to open things back up, and we need to do away with some of the restrictions that have been placed that we now know don't really have any real effect.
Senator, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, but thank you for coming on and talking to a Mobile audience this morning.
Well, thank you, and we enjoyed our time in Mobile. We lived there from 84 to 88 and still have quite a few friends in the Mobile area that we've kept in touch with. So,
hope
things continue to go well there for you.
Hey, appreciate it. We'll do it again real soon. That was State Senator Larry Stutz here on the program.